Welcome back. The world-famous Phil Henry Show here on our Phil TV in HD screen. A moment ago, we had Carroll Shelby's, the story of the passing of the legendary Carroll Shelby. And we'll start the hour out with him and Bud and Robert, you guys. Bud and Robert with me here in our News and Information Hour. You guys can just keep quiet.
Well, I'm not going to do nothing smart-ass.
Yeah, I just don't want any smart-ass comments here, but... Anyway, welcome back to the radio program. Our number 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. We're online at philhenryshow.com. You can watch us in live streaming video right now, our Phil TV and HD video cast in front of the gorgeous El Pacifico, as well as thousands of hours of archive material, all kinds of other on-demand video, and all kinds of hour after hour after hour enjoyment to be had there with a backstage pass. If you want to know a little bit more about our website and our archives, you can visit our PhilHenryRadio.com site, and that has 24 hours of streaming Phil Henry archive material. So 24 hours, you can listen to full hours of our show at PhilHenryRadio.com. That's also going to be the future home of our podcast as well. Our number, 877-876-7445, world-famous Phil Henry Show. So for decades, Carroll Shelby, who just passed at the age of 89, and his name, you know, Bud, you were saying if nobody else knew his name, they knew his, what was it?
Yay, Chili Mix.
The Carroll Shelby Chili Mix, yeah. But he just died at the age of 89. Was he a Texan? Well, let's just read the story here. For decades, Carroll Shelby taught American car makers how to compete with and beat foreigners, ranging from the 1960s Ferrari exotics to the very first and very fast and furious Asian tuners. Along the way, he became the world's oldest heart transplant survivor and never seemed to lose the capacity for fun that made the Texas chicken farmer and chili chef, there it is.
I knew he had a chili.
Yeah, he did. And I've used it. And
what do you think?
It was good. You know, I mean, there's nothing in the Carroll Shelby chili mix that you couldn't just figure out yourself. But hey, you know.
Beats having to go out and buy yourself.
Yeah. The Texas chicky. The Texas.
Chicky farmer.
Texas chicken farmer. And chicky. I mean, chili chick. What the hell?
Let me do it. He's a chicken chef. Chicken shack.
What do you mean, chicken shack? Texas chili farmer. Not a chili farmer. He's a chicken farmer and a chili chicken. A chili chef. God.
Man, I ain't doing a show. You want to sound like you're all jacked up in the head? That's your problem.
I understand that. I was getting tongue-tied. Shelby, who died in his native Texas at the age of 89 on Friday, is best known for the legendary Cobra. That car was in the 60s. That was it, man. The Cobra. Oh, man. They wrote songs about the Cobra.
Which one?
I think there was one called Hey Little Cobra.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, that was the logical name for it. In any event, I think they had one called Hey Little Cobra, Cobra, You're Great, and I Love Cobra. I don't know. But in any event...
Talking about the snake?
The car! What did I tell you, man? Best known for the legendary Cobra, which married a big American V8 to a lightweight body and became one of the auto industry's timeless icons of performance. Now, I don't know that they ever sold the Cobra commercially. I could be wrong, but at the time, it was strictly a race car. And you heard people speak of the Cobra. Maybe they did. I was very young at the time. You heard people speak of the Cobra, but I never met anybody that owned one. Not a... well, maybe.
Probably have to look it up.
I guess I would. He loved fast cars. But unlike many enthusiasts who cut their teeth on massive 60s-era V8s, Shelby understood and appreciated the new technologies that would allow performance to coexist with fuel efficiency. Now, this is very interesting. Shelby was enthusiastic over the potential to build exciting cars with small engines. The first time that, quote, this author spoke to him in the mid-1980s, when he was launching, the author, by the way, is a writer for the Detroit Free Press. His name is Mark Phelan. And Mr. Phelan says, the first time I talked to Mr. Shelby in the 1980s, when he was launching a turbocharged performance version of the little Dodge Omni hatchback. You guys remember that car? Maybe you do. I don't know. He was launching a turbocharged performance version of the Dodge Omni hatchback. It was badged Omni GLH because it goes like hell, he said to the writer, promising to follow up with a GLHS that would go like hell some more. At a time when many enthusiasts believed emissions and fuel economy regulations would eliminate fun cars and fast driving, Shelby saw a bright future. Kids with hot rod hearts could do more to tune their cars than ever before. With the computer, and this is what Shelby believed, with the new computer controls that were just then coming into production, you could do more to change a car's character and performance than ever before, he predicted. And he was right. Just like he had been decades earlier when he believed a Ford V8 in a light body would blow past more expensive German, Italian, and English racers. Carroll Shelby didn't see limits. He kept his eye on the finish line and the checkered flag. It's a very nicely written piece.
Who wrote that?
Mark Phelan with the Detroit Free Press. Shelby came home to Ford in his last years, rejoining the automaker that powered his legendary Cobra to create a series of breathtaking Shelby GT500 Mustangs that bear his unique Cobra badge. The latest, the 2013 Shelby GT500, has a 650-horsepower V8 that was specifically developed to overshadow Chevrolet's latest Camaro. Boy, the Camaro and Mustang.
They've been going out a long time.
Most of my friends got five-speed Camaros.
Yeah, I'll bet they do.
What's that mean?
Just, you know, I don't know.
Oh, yeah, man, you think of Camaro is from Mexicans.
Yeah, what's that supposed to mean?
All right, I'm not going to get into that. Don't get into the racial politics of Camaros, if you don't mind, okay?
Ain't that what you said?
I didn't say anything of the sort.
You said a Camaro 5-speed for Mexicans.
Get out of here. I did not. You guys, that's how you jackasses talk. All the time.
Don't have to tell people.
Well, I'm telling them now if you're going to start hanging it on me. I don't know what your problem is, bud. You got all this race stuff. Your girlfriend's black. You're the weirdest cat I ever met in my life.
Yeah, you can say that again.
Why? What's the matter with it?
Nothing. You're always baiting Robert here. Always talking about black this, Mexican that, black this, Mexican that. And your girlfriend, who you're probably going to marry, is black.
Yeah, I'm not racist or nothing.
Well, I'd have to agree, except you talk all kinds of crap. Shelby came home to Ford in his last years.
You already read that part.
I'm going to belt you in about 5 seconds. Shelby came home to Ford in his last years, rejoining the automaker that powered his legendary Cobra to create a series of breathtaking Shelby GT500 Mustangs that bear his unique Cobra badge. The latest, the 2013 Shelby GT500, has a 650-horsepower V8 that was specifically developed to overshadow Chevrolet's latest Camaro. Well, I mean, he may be talking about smaller engines, you know, and more fuel efficiency, but there ain't nothing fuel efficient about a 650-horse V8, you know.
Yeah, well, he's trying to kick Camaro's ass.
I got to hand it to Chevy, though, man, to come up with a car that, you know, finally really scared Ford. Shelby grinned like a kid as the car's engine roared to life the evening before it would debut at the Los Angeles car show last fall. The latest, most impressive car had his name on it again, the way it should. That's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful article there about the late Carroll Shelby. How about that, huh?
You ever have a Mustang?
I didn't have a Mustang. I had a GTO back when GTOs were considered, you know, the Pontiac hot stuff. But Mustang's gorgeous. The original Mustang, in terms of just the lines on the car, was great. And then I think they kind of messed up the look of the car a little bit.
Yeah, they did. They jacked up the front. They jacked up the headlights and everything.
Yeah, they jacked up the design. Then Shelby got a hold of it. And there's a picture that I have of him here. If you guys are watching on Phil TV and HD, this is a picture of Carroll Shelby. The 40th anniversary of the Ford Mustang. This is at the Nashville Super Speedway. And he is on he's posing next to a 1968 GT500 KR. A 68, boy, that's a gorgeous, gorgeous fire engine red, black interior Mustang. Damn! Just a beautiful car, you know.
Yeah, I drive that car all the time, though.
Nah, I wouldn't drive a car like that all the time. You take that out on Sundays, you know what I'm saying, man? You take that out on a nice day, you ain't gonna be commuting in that. Are you nuts? But you take a car like that out on a Sunday, you just drive it around, show it off, you know.
Yeah, take out of muscle cars.
Yeah, go down to the muscle car show if you want to. So, Carroll Shelby, our condolences and our expressed admiration to Mr. Shelby, who passed on at the age of 89. And, you know, these names that we know whether it's Andy Granatelli, whether it's Carroll Shelby, and they're all known for different things. I knew the name when I was growing up as a kid. I knew the name Jim Hall. Now, how many people know the name Jim Hall? Probably not a lot, but Jim Hall had his moment in the sun as he was from Texas. Some damn good car people from Texas. Jim Hall had the automatic transmission Chaparral Can-Am car. Growing up in Los Angeles, we'd go out to Riverside Raceway out here on the edge of the desert. And Riverside at that time had a raceway. It was a damn good one, and a lot of fun to go out there and watch the sports cars go. They had a road race track, and once a year they had, in August, they had a Grand Prix featuring Can-Am cars. These are closed-wheeled cars, bigger than the average sports car, bigger engines, and this guy Jim Hall came out there with his freaking automatic transmission on this Chaparral, and won the race. Beat, and they had drivers out there at the time like Jim Clark, who was in a Lotus, Graham Hill. These were all Formula One drivers from Europe and good ones. And here comes Hall, this Texas guy with this automatic trans.
They don't have no automatic trans anymore.
No, that's what I was talking to Dan about. I don't think they do. All right, we'll be right back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. What is a... I got a tip for the waitresses out there. Not a financial tip, but it is a tip that will help you get financial tips. What do you think?
You didn't talk about them going nude or something.
I didn't say nude, did I? I'm going to start to make good on some of these promises about kicking some ass around here. We'll be back with that and more on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show in our News and Information Hour.
Right after these messages.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. For all things news and talk radio, visit trncentral.com.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. I got some video on Phil TV and HD. Now we're just going. Now we're just being a bunch of dudes. I had some Carroll Shelby video that I was showing, and just as a kick for Dan, I decided to put up pictures of the 350 GT, which is his favorite car, the 1965. And I just happened to stumble upon a piece of video with Carroll Shelby himself as a much younger guy. So, all right.
Yeah, that car looked kind of small.
That's a hell of a looking, nice looking sports car, though. And what we didn't watch, and maybe we can do later on, that cat took that out onto the track and chased down a Porsche. See, people are crazy about cars, as you know, and they're going to want. And that brings me to the topic of, you know, the whole fuel efficiency thing. And more to the point, the hybrid thing. There's no question that they would have far more success with the hybrid if they designed it like they wanted actual men to drive them and not dorks, you know?
Well, you better not say that, man. Some people take offense.
Well, I mean, come on, man. You got to be... I don't think it shows a very... I don't think it shows much aptitude on the part of these designers. I don't think... It's almost like they don't want to sell those cars because... If you know anything about cars in the United States, you know that people are, it's an extension of someone's identity. It just is. That's all there is to it. You know, you can make all the jokes you want about guys that drive big trucks and they got small you-know-what.
That Facebook group. I like your truck. Sorry about your penis.
All right. But the fact of the matter remains that cars, trucks, you name it, these are, it's very important to people.
That why you drive a Jaguar?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, yeah, that is why I drive a Jaguar. I drive a Jaguar because I drove nothing but garbage cans through 90% of my life. And when I finally made some money, I was still driving around a freaking Ford Ranger truck. What else was I driving? I had a Volkswagen, man. I was driving, you know. And my wife at the time said, why don't you spend some money on a car, man? I mean, don't you think you could afford it? And I liked it. I liked it a lot. I liked it sitting in a sedan. I like having I love driving that car, and it's comfortable. I like the way it looks, and that's just the way it is, you know, and that's the way everybody is with their car. But if you take these freaking fuel-efficient Priuses or whatever, these hybrids, It looks like you're a freaking little old lady school teacher or something. Why are they designing the cars that way? And don't give me this stuff about how, well, you know, it's the only way they can design them, because don't give me that. Nonetheless, they design those cars like they don't want anybody in. They don't want a lot of people to buy them.
Would you buy one?
No, I would not buy one. No, I would not buy one. Okay, and you can call me a pig and a slob and a gas hog. You can say anything you want, but I wouldn't buy one. Now, if they wanted to make one that looked halfway decent...
Don't they have a Mercedes?
I don't know whether they got a Mercedes this or a Lexus that. I don't know, man. I ain't talking about spending the, you know, breaking the bank on one. I'm just saying, does it have to look like a dorkmobile? If you're looking to save bread, it doesn't necessarily mean that if you're buying a car like that, a hybrid, that it's got to look like, Dork 1. You know?
Like President Obama's Dork 1.
Exactly. They got Dork, they got Air Force 1. Then they have the president's Prius, Dork 1. All right, researchers leave a good tip for waitresses. You know what it is, ladies, if you're a waitress? And I can only add to the chorus of voices that have been in support of you all these many years, like that beautiful, that monologue from Reservoir Dogs, where, you know, women in the workforce, the high percentage of women in the workforce that are waitresses and that they live in the... I understand all of that, and I tip liberally. Now... Red lipstick. That's right. Red lipstick. Waitresses may strive to get orders correct and provide excellent service, but pocketing good tips is all about the lips, according to French researchers.
Yeah, the French is... They make all the lipstick anyway.
The French make all the lipstick? I don't know if they do or not.
Maybe, man. They make a lot. They make Chanel No. 5 is what they make.
Yeah, Chanel No. 5.
What about Chanel No. 5?
They make that.
So what if they do make it? We're talking about lipstick, aren't we?
Ain't that lipstick?
No, it ain't lipstick. It's cologne. It's perfume.
Well, that's the same thing.
Would you shut up? No, it ain't the same thing. Waitresses who wear red lipstick on average receive tips 50% of the time from male customers.
Yeah, but it leaves a ring around. Well, I shouldn't say.
Did it?
It does.
Yeah, uh-huh. It leaves a ring around, oh, I shouldn't say.
You know what I mean.
Shut the cake hole. All right. Waitresses who wear red lipstick on average receive 50% tips 50% of the time from male customers, huh? Let me read that again, because that seems like not a big deal. Waitresses who wear red lipstick on average receive tips 50% of the time from male customers. You know what? This is a... London, England. Let me explain something to you, Great Britain, which you probably already know. We tip all the time in America. If waitresses, I don't care if they're wearing red lipstick, green lipstick, or they've got multicolored lipstick. 50% of the time, we tip over here, see? Now, I know in Great Britain, they don't.
They don't?
Not really. I mean, when you do tip, it's considered to be quite an event. So they got an article here that says, well, hey, man, 50% of the time these women get tips. Well, over here, that would be considered just flat rude. So if you're an American waitress and you put on red lipstick, good God almighty, who knows what could happen. In any event, the tips were larger in amount than those given to waitresses who wore brown, pink, or no lipstick.
Brown? God.
Brown? You ain't seen brown lipstick?
Yeah, man, you're like a black woman. You ever heard of black women?
I don't mean nothing racial about it.
Anyway, and those groups on average were only tipped 30% of the time. So we're talking about Great Britain, and this is a study that's talking about how often you get tipped. And to hear that waitresses only get tipped 50% of the time, even with red lipstick, that sounds like El Cheapo. The presence of red lipstick made no impact on the tipping habits of female customers. The researchers noted that the rise in tips by male customers could be due to red lips being associated with an indication of estrogen levels, sexual arousal, and health. The study's research and results had practical implications for female employees, the sociologist said, suggesting that red lipstick was a means for enhancing their incomes, especially in bars or restaurants where men go. Now, if you want to get tipped all the time, move to America and get the same job, and it's considered to be rude not to tip at all. Okay? Put on red lipstick over here, and they may leave you a freaking lottery ticket.
Might be a loser.
Yeah, it might be a loser, but they'd still... Anyway, we'll be right back with more here on the world-famous film. More meaningless red lipstick. Massachusetts reverses its course on a bake sale ban. You wait till you find out why. The world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry.
On Phil TV and HD, that's a 350. That's a 65 Ford Shelby Cobra there, Dan. Dan Northcraft, our engineer. That's your favorite car right there, man. Look at the pipes on that. That's a gorgeous car, isn't it? And that's a 65 350 GT. That was at the 2011 Surf and Turb Classic Car Show at Imperial Beach, California. It's that time of year, you know, all over the country where all the muscle cars come out. Everybody's, showing off. Their cars and stuff.
Yeah, do it $20 time of the year here.
Yeah, well, we don't have snow. When I lived in Minnesota, I lived in Minneapolis, and I would ask guys that were car enthusiasts, I said, well, I guess when the snow, he says, yeah, you think I'm going to bring my ride out in this stuff? You know, everything is like a couple of inches off the ground, and you've got snow that's 5 feet. That ain't going to happen. So, but when the spring months hit in the cities up there in Chicago and any of these cities that are snowbound, when finally the spring hits and everything melts, man, the bikes, the cars, it's like a parade out there. And you see all the bikes lined up in front of the bars. There's some joint in the Twin Cities called... Whiskey River or Whiskey Junction. And, man, come May, on a Friday night, it's like a bike show out there. It's kind of like the way Neptune's Net is up here.
I went up Neptune's Net one time, but I seen a guy down a radiator on a motorcycle.
A radiator?
Yeah.
That's a big engine. All right. Massachusetts has reversed its course on a bake sale ban. Now, let's read about this. Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick said on Thursday he would support changing school nutrition guidelines that critics said threatened school fundraising projects. The State Department of Health, the public health department there in Massachusetts, said it would take emergency measures to reinstate Now they're going to take emergency measures to reinstate school bake sales, which would be banned effective August 1st under new rules intended to combat student obesity. I think this has happened in other states. The bake sale, which is a tried and true way of raising money for various school projects. We had them, and you've had them, and we've all, you know, everybody has bake sales. And they banned these, of course, in Massachusetts and other states. Governor Patrick said, nobody's interested in banning bake sales. We're interested in student nutrition, and we're interested in good choice. The governor said he would sign an amendment passed by the House Wednesday, and which was expected to gain Senate approval Thursday, to allow local officials to accept or reject the new school nutrition rules. So the school can make up its mind. Department of Public Health Commissioner John Auerbach issued a statement saying the department will amend the rules in June to relax restrictions on school-sponsored events, including bake sales. The newspaper said Auerbach.
Everybody named Auerbach in Massachusetts?
Is everybody named Auerbach in Massachusetts?
Yeah, the guy, the Boston Celtics.
You mean Red Auerbach?
Yeah.
No, they're not everybody. What kind of an idiotic question is that?
Well, maybe it's all the same family.
Yeah, remember that time you went down to Cayman Island and everybody was named Botton?
Well, yeah. I mean, when I went to Cayman Island, that's something I didn't tell you. I went down to Cayman Islands. I've been down there a couple of times. But you'll notice if you go to the Cayman Islands, you see Bodden this and Bodden that. B-O-D-D-E-N. And there was a Bodden speed shop. And then there was Bodden boats. And then there was a Bodden real estate. And then there's a Bodden. And as sure as hell, I got on the plane to fly back to Miami. And the pilot came on.
And good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Officer Bodden. Man, are you kidding me, man? I'm like... That's incest.
Yeah, that ain't that against the law?
What do you mean incest? It could be way, way out extended. Well, I don't know. Maybe it is.
Yeah.
But no, that ain't what they got going on in Massachusetts, okay? I don't think. So the Department of Public Health Commissioner is a guy named Auerbach. And anyway, John Auerbach issued a statement saying the department will amend the rules in June to relax restrictions on school-sponsored events, including bake sales, according to the Boston Globe. Auerbach said school nutrition standards, quote, have always been about reducing childhood obesity in Massachusetts and protecting our kids from the serious long-term health impacts that obesity can cause. Always, even going all the way back to the days of John Adams when he was a, manure farmer. Now, then again, so he said, we hope to return the focus to how we can work together to make our schools healthy and environments in which our children can thrive. Now, that sounds sensible. Critics said the rules would hurt fundraising for athletics, band trips. And it's true. You know, we got to start, sooner or later, you got to say the following. Say, look, bake sales is how we raise money. Well, we can't have bake sales. Why? Because the kids are going to balloon out to about 900 pounds. And you say, well, what do you mean the kids are going to balloon out? How about having some parental supervision on what they eat?
Well, I mean, like, if your parents go to a bake sale.
All right, Robert, did your mother go to bake sales?
Yeah, my mother and mine both went to bake sales.
Okay, and what did they do?
They'd come back on a pie. Like a Boston cream pie or something like that.
What's a Boston cream pie? See, that's Boston again.
But no, it's not. What do you mean Boston again?
That's where Red Auerbach's from and everything.
Oh, get out of here. Boston cream pie and what else?
Boy, they come back with cake. And they say, Robert, got a cream pie here. And I'd say, yeah, got my name on it. That I'd always say. Is it got my name? My aunt would always say, yeah, got your name on it. Come get it, boy.
Then you go ahead and go face first into it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's not healthy at all, man.
What do you want me to do about it?
I wonder if we can get your aunt on the phone, huh?
Man, you better not. Don't get up in her face about it.
I'm not going to get in her face about it if you get her on the phone, though, bud.
Yeah, I'll call her up.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
What I'm trying to determine here is if my mom would go to bake sales, I guess. But most of these bake sales, did your aunt and your mom contribute?
Oh, yeah, my aunt made all kind of raisin cookie, everything.
Oh, hey, Mavis, how are you? Mavis, it's Phil Hendry. Mavis?
Oh, yeah, I'm here. Mavis Bennett here. I can't hear the phone.
Can you hear me, dear?
I'm trying to listen. I can't hear nothing. I got it.
Bud, help her out.
Yeah, Miss Leonard? Miss Leonard?
I can't hear. I hear a retard, but I can't hear anything.
Mavis, it's Phil Hendry.
Audie, it's me. It's Robert.
Robert, is that you?
Yeah, it's me. Are you on Phil Hendry's show?
Oh, all right. I'll turn that off. They're trying to fix something here. I'm trying to turn that off. Could I turn it off? All right, I think I hear. Are you there, Mr. Hendry?
I'm here, yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear. We are trying to wash some clothes, and I have a noisy washing machine. And Ellis is here, Robert. Ellis, your cousin is here.
Oh, yeah, tell him I said hey.
Yeah, Robert says hey, Ellis.
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm good, man. You helping out on it?
I'm fixing the washing machine.
This is pretty late to be doing washing, isn't it?
Yes, it is very late to be doing washing. I can't. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you.
It is very late to be doing washing, but I don't have no choice because Robert... he comes home, I got to do the washing because I got to scrub the streets out, you know.
Oh, you don't say nothing about that.
God, man.
What are you talking about? I have to come home, this boy drops his underwear on the floor, and it's going to take me about an hour with a good wire brush to take a streaking out of that underwear.
God, man, that embarrassed me.
Then I suggest that you do something about that, okay? That I've got to take a wire brush the boy's britches, get the streaking out.
All right, well, we didn't call you about that. We called to ask you about bake sales.
You called to ask me about what?
About bake sales?
I don't know about a bake sale.
Yeah, you do. I used to cook for them.
I cooked a bake sale many, many years ago when Robert was a little boy and him and my sister.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we wanted to ask you about that.
Did somebody die?
No, somebody didn't. What do you mean, from eating your bake sale?
Could have been. I got to get a new washer. Your cousin Ella said I need a washer.
You better get it.
Yeah, Robert, go ahead and get it.
I'm not you, dumbass.
Ella said you a dumbass.
Okay. All right, so anyway, bake sales. Did you do a lot of cooking for bake sales yourself, or did you buy them, buy things at the bake sale?
Well, I did a lot of cooking. I had a raisin cookie. I had a couple of little cuties that I did. I had I did brownie. I did fudge. And I love the fudge, you know.
I love that fudge.
Yeah, I know you love the fudge. Robert, he would steal the fudge and shove it in his face. I always knew when Robert had stole the fudge because he had it all over his face, you know, and then he tried to hide it in his underwear. And one time,
tried to hide it in his underwear.
Yeah, I tried to sneak it out of the house. I'd stick it down my pants.
Yeah, and one time I said, "You have, do you have your lunch money?" And he went to go in his pocket, but he put his hand down his pants instead, and pulled his fudge out. And I said, "Man, you are just like one of them people in a." In a tution, you know, where they throw it on the wall. I said, oh, God, the boy just pulled it out of his shorts.
What?
You thought I pulled my own doo-doo out?
Oh, would you come on?
I didn't know. The boy putting the brownie down his pants. And so I had written that song, you know, when I wrote that spiritual.
Yeah, but, Ari, you know what I wouldn't. You said I was acting like a man on an institution.
Because I've worked in an institution, and I'll tell you right now, boy, that a lot of those people in there would take it out of their shorts and throw it all over like they're Jackson Pollock making one of them paintings, you know, just throwing all the paint all over the place, like a Jackson Pollock only using a diaper stuff and thing like that.
Yeah.
So I wrote that song.
Well, what song?
Well, they're called the brownie. They're called the brownie. Yeah, he put his hand in his shorts, brownie, and you know, went like that. Well, one fine day, last May, put his hand in his, you know, and then it goes, there's the brownie. It's brownie mix.
Well.
What are you laughing at, Mr. Henry?
I'm laughing at you. I'm laughing at you. All right, so we've done enough poo jokes, you know.
I'm not joking. That's what this fool did, you know.
No, I understand that. So, Robert, no wonder you like fudge, huh?
Well, I mean, I don't like fudge that much. I mean, I was a little kid. I didn't know what I was doing.
You don't even know any better not to put it in your pants.
I didn't put it down my pants, man. I thought I put it in my pocket. That's what you're trying to say.
Yeah, that fool, he thought he put a fudge square. Down in his short, in his pocket, but it's actually down his pants. So he reached in and pulled that out, and I went, my God, he's acting like he's a blithering, he's like a babbling fool gonna start throwing it. Like the monkey do at the zoo, you know?
Yeah, if you go down to the zoo, you see a monkey do that.
That's what I was afraid Robert gonna do.
All right, well, you'll notice that I called you up to ask you about bake sales, and we didn't get anywhere near that. We're talking about him pulling brownies out of his shorts and throwing it around. So,
well, that's my family, you know.
Yep, that's the Leonard family.
That's right.
Oh, that's great. Okay. Thanks, Mavis.
Thank you. When are you going to be done, Ellis? Because you're a pain in the...
So your cousin's over there trying to get that fixed, huh?
Yeah, trying to fix the washing machine.
All right, we'll be right back on a world-famous Phil Henry show, 877-876-PHIL. Reese Witherspoon's dad has been sued for bigamy. Check that out.
Reese Witherspoon's hot.
She may be hot, but her father is hotter. And we'll read that story when we come back. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show. What was
truth
that song again?
Is our bitch.
About brownie.
The Phil Henry Show.
Oh, the brownie. Oh, the brownie. Put his hand.
For more information on this and other great talk programs, go to talkradionetwork.com.
Well, because this guy's selling his Cobra. You know, we were looking at YouTube. This dude's selling a 1965 AC Shelby Cobra that he said was a show winner. He's selling it. This was as of October 2011. The video is still up on YouTube. And I guess he didn't sell it. There's not even any comments.
Now, he might have disabled a comment and maybe open up now.
I mean, I could probably do this guy a lot. I could probably help this guy if I just flashed a picture. But I'm not going to do it.
Why not?
Because I don't want to get any expectations going. All right. I'm not going to put some guy's cobra on. Hey, look, here's a guy's cobra for sale here on the Phil Henry Show. You remember the old garage sales and stuff like that?
They're having like a yard sale.
I mean, I worked at a radio station not too long ago where on Saturday morning they had, it's the Saturday morning garage sale here on KASS. And hello, I'm Bob so-and-so, you know.
But they do.
Well, they sold all kinds of stuff. You know, it was real cheesy, real small town. It was just like, oh, hi, yeah, listen, I've got a, and then they would say things like, I've got a wall heater. Now, it's a wall heater and it's nice. And it can be mounted easily, this, that, okay? I know what it was. Some cat had a grandfather clock. I have a grandfather clock, and it's really nice, you know. Well, the guy would call back every week. I still have that grandfather clock, you know. And
why would they hang up on the guy?
They didn't, man. They didn't. It was not a very well-produced show. I mean, you obviously don't want to have the same products and stuff, you know. I don't think you should. And just stuff like that. And they'd always have to say, no dealers, no firearms, no explosives, you know. So these would have to be just individual people that were selling this stuff. But this dude called, you know, yes, hi, I called last week. I have the grandfather clock stuff. Like week six, yeah, hi, I still have my grandfather clock. I don't think anybody in the coverage area of the radio station wants your grandfather clock. Maybe I'm wrong. So anyway,
anybody did ever sell it?
I don't know. As long as I can remember listening to that show, they never sold it. And then they even did this on a big city. When I was in Atlanta on Saturday morning. Nah, that couldn't have been. No, I think there was in Atlanta. They had a show that was a Mr. Fix-It kind of a thing. Anyway, in Nashville, a judge in Tennessee will have to sort out a bizarre series of events involving the parents of actress Reese Witherspoon. The Hollywood star's mother, Mary Elizabeth Betty Witherspoon, filed a lawsuit. You know, there was a great jazz musician named Jimmy Witherspoon.
Think that was her dad?
Well, he was black.
Oh.
Anyway, could be. Anyway, the Hollywood star's mother, Mary Elizabeth Betty Witherspoon, filed a lawsuit Tuesday in Davidson County against her husband, John Witherspoon, seeking to have his new marriage annulled and accusing him of bigamy. Yes, it was bigamy. Anyway,
just read the story, huh?
Oh, well, yes, sir. Betty Witherspoon says John Witherspoon can't be married to Trishianne Taylor, a woman he appeared with in a wedding announcement in the Tennessean last month, because he's still married to her. The April 22nd announcement said John Witherspoon and Trishianne Taylor married on January the 14th in Gatlinburg, Tennessee, and a summer reception in Nashville is planned. Well, guess what, pal? You may have to put that off. Cowboy boots and yellow roses accented the ambiance of the couple's Texas heritage, the paid announcement read. The bride's full-length formal ivory satin gown featured a sequin-braided halter necklace. The groom wore a white linen suit accentuated with a gold Parthenon tie, a gift from the bride, tight vinyl pants, and penny loafers. I'm just kidding about that.
Yeah.
John Witherspoon, age 60, and Taylor, 19.
Really?
No, I'm kidding. No, Ms. Taylor is 60. John Witherspoon, 70, and Taylor, 60, applied for their marriage licenses in Davidson County on January 11th, 3 days before the ceremony, according to records. But the Davidson County dumbasses didn't run it through a computer and couldn't find... I'm kidding. I'm sure they don't have that, though.
Why don't they have that, man? I bet you run their ass, run that driver's license.
Well, they're not going to... I mean, they got a database for driver's licenses. I just... They don't have one. I guess they're going to have to start having one for marriage certificates, huh?
Well, they already do that. Probably put a computer strip on the back.
Hey, man, let me tell you what. If this crap's going down... You know, a marriage license is made out of paper...
Well, would you say they got a marriage license like a credit card?
I don't know. Maybe this isn't that big of a problem. If it's not that chronic a problem, but it would seem easy enough. It probably isn't a very chronic problem, but it would seem easy enough if you had that kind of computer tracking of marriages. That's all I'm saying. I mean, this is a problem for Reese Witherspoon. and we're laughing about it, and she's probably embarrassed, or maybe she didn't give a sweet GED. Anyway, before that, Taylor and John Witherspoon applied for their marriage certificate in Rutherford County on July the 6th, 2011. It was never returned to the county. Marriage applications in Tennessee are only valid for 30 days. Taylor is from Las Casas in Rutherford County and has been married twice before. It's unclear how the two met. Maybe they haven't met. According to the wedding announcement, she's active in Veterans Affairs and is the former president and CEO of Action Designs. The salon business was run out of a house in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, Rutherford County. All right, we'll update you on this. Or I'm sure you'll update it yourselves before I can update you on Reese Witherspoon's dad and his bigamy. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show is produced by Dan Northcraft and Phil Hendry. Join us online at philhendryshow.com. Get a backstage pass and join us as we videocast our radio show as well as... not just video cast or radio show, as well as audio cast the whole thing, okay? Let's see. We'll see you guys on Monday. Don't forget Phil Hendry Show, philhendryradio.com. That's philhendryradio.com. You can listen to or have your friends listen to free live streams from the Phil Hendry Show. Until then, let that be a lesson for you.
Phil Hendry.